Warning. The following presentation is for mature audiences only. It is not intended for children, the oversensitive, or self-righteous gas bags with sticks up their butts.
This project is extremely dangerous.
It's because I blew it out of the goddamn airlock.
You're listening to the Guardians of the Geekery podcast, featuring Matt Starnslord, Carol the Cat, the Giddy Geeker, and Tiffany the Technician.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
And now, damn right they shot first, the hosts of Guardians of the Geekery.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to... Dun, dun, dun. Sorry, my cackling probably went on there, too.
Yes.
It did. Episode 224.
Wasn't there like a room 224? Was that
no, we had this conversation last time. Do you ever go back and listen to our podcast? We actually talked about this on 221. And then on 222, we talked about it again.
Karen
Valentine was on 222. 227 was Marla Gibbs and her family.
Okay. Love, and that
then,
show. Love that.
And then
two seven three or something.
Is the Shining room, and you're supposed to remember when we get there.
239 or 237.
237. And then Matt was saying something about 500 and something, and I was like,
We've got a ways. Yeah.
We've got a ways to get that. So
I got a little ways to remember the Shining. It's 23. It's either 237 or
I believe it's 237.
Yeah.
In August or February or August or September, you're going to have to remind us.
Yes.
Do you have any significant room numbers, Tiffany?
I do not.
You just always look like you're in front of a criminal investigation where you're being asked by a board.
Oh. I always kind of imagine that I'm on like C-SPAN, like in front of a Congress.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, testifying. Like a congressional committee.
And no, I did not have anything to do with that.
It reminds me of Fifth Element. It always reminds me of the Fifth Element.
A light at her.
Whenever I see you two, it's like the Fifth Element because you're the Chris Rock character, and you're Bruce Willis, and you're, what do you say?
No.
I am not doing that cosplay. I will not. I do not have the décolletage that Chris Rock has. I'm sorry. I can say autopass. Multipass.
Multipass. Oh,
so speaking of Fifth Element, it's movie week.
Yes, it is.
So we all went to see Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes.
Sweet.
And
just for good measure, I watched Ant-Man.
I kind of wish I had.
Yeah, I kind of wish I had because it took me a second to remember who a few people were when they appeared. Because it's been 2 years.
Yeah.
But, oh my God. So general reactions?
General reaction, if you liked Ant-Man, you'll like Ant-Man and the Wasp. But they basically redo the whole, it's the same thing, basically. I will say I think I liked this one a little bit less.
Oh.
Because I didn't... Ant-Man... Edgar Wright had his fingers on Ant-Man. He doesn't have his fingers on Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I think that kind of hurts it a little bit. I think it also hurts it that they're basically... It's the same thing. There's not a whole lot different here.
No, I disagree. But that's okay. Uh-oh. That's why we're here. Tiffles.
Dun, dun, dun.
My first thought of thinking of this movie is that there's a great makeup artist in the Quantum or whatever, because
we'll get to that because
decades and decades later has eyeliner on and lipstick.
I was saying that when I recorded a different review, I was like, apparently she found a microscopic Sephora.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that because I do actually, and this is spoilerific, right?
Oh yeah, total spoilers, by the way, if you haven't figured this out.
Okay, because I do want to address that, because that was one of the problems I had with the film, is that it didn't, I thought it was going to do something and it didn't.
Okay.
I will say this, I liked Evangeline Lilly better in this film.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't just continual resting bitch face.
Yeah.
Well, they actually gave her a lot to do in this movie.
But my problem with that is by giving her more to do, they kind of made Scott dumb. They took away from Scott Lang, where I don't think they needed... He was continually doing stupid stuff here. It's like...
But I kind of felt like that was more the Paul Rudd than the Evangeline Lilly. That's kind of who Paul Rudd plays well, is the semi-stupid person.
Yes, but if you watch Ant-Man, he's not.
Right.
He's actually quite brilliant, which is one of the reasons why Pym actually...
Picks him.
Is because he's smart.
But I think the thing that was interesting with Ant-Man is that, you know, obviously when you've got... You know, Hope and Hank standing there doing all their computery stuff, they still needed him. And yeah, he still did stuff that they couldn't do.
And that was fine. The computer stuff and him not knowing what the quantum realm is, that's fine because he's the everyman here and he's basically our voice. But it was him, like, actively doing stupid stuff. Like, I called Louie and told him where we were. Why would you do that? Granted, that gave us the best scene of the movie, which was Luis on truth serum.
Yeah. I thought one of the best scenes was the opening scene with him and his daughter and that very intricate, you know, whole Indiana Jones thing. And I think that's where some of his brilliance came out because he obviously had to think of that and the little magic scenes and stuff like that. So, and I see what you're saying. In contrast, when he was around them, he was dumber. But we did have some moments of brilliance for him. The fact that he was doing all this stuff with the ex-con company and designing the security systems and everything like that. I think he did well with that.
And don't get me wrong. When I say that I like this one a little bit less than Ant-Man, that does not mean I did not enjoy the hell out of this film. I did enjoy the hell out of this film. I had some issues with it, mostly with Janet. But... yeah, it was still an incredibly enjoyable film.
But I do agree it's a lot more Wasp story than it is Ant-Man, and that is a difference. But I think that there were certain parts. The thing that was bad for me was I saw the trailer before, and this did not follow Marvel's normal trailer rules. There were scenes in the trailer that were very far deep into the movie.
Yeah. And
I didn't appreciate that part.
Quite frankly, them putting Michelle Pfeiffer on one of the posters to me was like, why would you do that? That just kind of destroys the reveal
of whether or not you find her.
Yeah. But there she is. She's on.
Did you ever have, I mean, beyond the fact that she was on the poster,
you knew
did
you
have any doubt?
But the way
like literally the whole trajectory of the movie is to find her, and that they're gonna like go.
But the way she's portrayed on the poster.
Oh, I didn't see the poster, so
yeah. If they had done the young version of her, on the poster, then you could have been like, oh, backstory. Oh,
yeah. So I think that was a mistake. But that's, you know, that's just marketing. I try not to watch too many trailers anymore.
I don't either, but it's been on a lot.
I'll watch the first one and then I'll just skip the rest of them, which I think worked really well for me for A Quiet Place and Hereditary. This one, I just saw the one. But I think Ant-Man suffered from this too. It has a weak villain.
I didn't like her. I didn't care about her.
This, to me, it's kind of lazy writing because here she is and she's had this condition for 20 years. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you've got 2 weeks to live. You better do something now. It's like, what have you been doing for 20 years?
Well, they've been building their thing. I think that's part of it, is that it's just kind of coincidental timing in the sense that they've been building their thing. They haven't had all the parts. And now she's finally getting the part that she needs in order to fulfill this tunnel. And so subsequently it's like, oh, well, thank God that they did this prior to me expiring in 2 weeks, I guess. Yeah. But
I think that's the nature of comic books. They're very much like, so I remember when my mom, you know, I read comic books forever. My mom never touched a comic book. My mom watched soap operas and my grandma watched soap operas. And it's like, I didn't really like those. But then I watched a couple and I was like, this is the same shit. It's just all these things.
All very coincidental.
Yeah. And it's like Stan Lee started back in the day of something very smart where, but when you do a movie, it kind of is kind of odd, but where it's like everybody's interconnected And it's like your villains end up being your old roommates. And all, I mean, when you really get into the Marvel Universe, it's like just like a soap opera. Everybody is intertwined so tightly, but they realize the power of that. It brought people back to read the stories. So there's a storytelling device that resonates with people with soap operas and comic books, where it's just, you know, you make fun of it, but at the same time, that's why you keep going back and being like, oh my gosh, is he going to become the new Green Goblin? It's like, well, yeah probably so, because he was your roommate in college. Yeah, it's like, yeah. It's just like, you know, there's all these intertwined, but it's funny how those are similar, and some people, you know, there's not crossover to me. Once I like saw both worlds, I was like, this is the same thing. It's like the same, it's a storytelling device, but.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. I mean, this is not it's not as huge as a moneymaker, obviously, as Black Panther and Infinity War, like, as far as box office.
I don't think Marvel knew what they had with Black Panther, because I don't think they thought Black Panther was going to make that much money. But it does show that.
Not quite that much, but yeah.
It does show that when you diversify, you don't shrink your audience, you grow your audience.
Yeah. But I mean, why I liked Ant-Man was it was a heist film.
Yeah.
And it's just like when, you know, a lot of people don't read any of the comic books, and that's fine, but comic books do the same thing. A lot of these series that some of these things are based on, they're heist comic book stories that just happen to be a superhero. And that's what Ant-Man was. It was just a heist movie where he could shrink, and yeah, that's fun stuff, but the main thing, it's a heist movie, and then it's like kind of a buddy comedy movie when you inject, you know, yes. You know, it's just like, that's what it really is. And it's like, comic books can be so many different things. So you see Infinity War, and that's just like the culmination of all these huge epic stories, but it's like, there's these little tiny stories too. And then you had Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one that came out, and the comedy of that was just like, whoa, this is so different. And really that had very little to do with the comic books that were out in the day called Guardians of the Galaxy. They just took some different characters, and I mean, it was its own thing. And I think that's what's beautiful, but it's like, there's a lot you can do with these things.
Yeah. I mean, I think Ant-Man is similar to Guardians of the Galaxy in that it's an outlier. Yeah. It's not, he's not one of the original Avengers. He came into Germany and did a thing and supposedly
got arrested for it.
So, you know, I mean,
yeah. And the way they introduced it too was kind of interesting, because, you know, in the comics, you had the original Ant-Man and the Wasp, Janet and Hank. And it's like, he was a genius, just like hung around with Tony Stark and Reed Richards from Fantastic Four, which, oh my God, we might actually get all those characters together now that this purchase looks like it's going through. But it's like, yeah, so it's like, I kind of liked what Marvel did. They didn't follow the movies, you know, the MCU, they didn't follow exactly like the comic books. So they allowed that kind of mystery. And then we get to see a flashback in Ant-Man and the Wasp of the original Ant-Man and the Wasp, and really cool.
Which I have to say, their de-aging is, that was scary good.
It was very good. Yeah.
Oh my God. Compared to like the X-Men movies, I'm getting sick because this is too weird.
Or like Guardians of the Galaxy 2, like how big was Ego's head for all the makeup they put on him. I mean, and they did it well because they didn't belabor it.
Yeah.
Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer. Michelle Pfeiffer looked amazing in the de-aging, but they kept it. It was at night. It was dark.
Yeah. Right.
It was all the
and it wasn't de-aging them to like 20s. They were still in their late 30s, early 40s. It wasn't like, you know.
And that was acceptable because as scientists or whatever, they may have done it later in life. So, yeah, it was a practical effect as well as a CGI effect, and I thought they did a great job on that.
Yeah. That being said, it's
Maybelline, but you know, whatever.
But that being said, there's talk of an actual Pym and Janet Ant-Man and Wasp movie. Please don't do a whole de-aging movie. That would be
no.
I think
I like how it is.
I think you can do little snippets of it here and there, but anything more than that, it starts to look creepy.
And plus, I really like the two mentors that they have. You know, it's like, someone like Scott Lang needs someone to show him the ropes, and and so does Hope. And it's like, I think that's really good to have mentors. And
I thought it was interesting too, and I'm not sure how I feel about it, but I thought it was interesting that the villain ends up maybe not being as much of a villain at the end. I know it was a weak villain, but I more was interested in the fact that Lawrence Fishburne's character, Bill Fisher?
Yeah.
Foster.
I knew it was with an F and an ER. That he ends up being, you know, like when Ghost is like, I'm going to go after, you know, Aunt Scott's daughter. He's like, no, I will not help you if you do that. That is not part of this process. So even though he tricked Henry to coming there, he did have a certain line that you couldn't draw. So there's a potential redemption, and where we don't know where Avengers 4 is going to go.
Yeah.
There's a potential there that we could end up with Ghost being a similar Nebula character, you know, that, yeah, you know, she may help because it helps her kind of situation. So it was interesting.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
I really enjoyed this one more. And I think part of it was because I knew that you had told me and I had read about the fact that Henry Pym was the original Ant-Man. And I felt that I got a payoff for that because I got to see him in a suit doing that. And I got to see a little bit of Janet as the original Wasp flying around. I didn't think about the makeup thing. I just thought it was bad when I saw her because her mascara was a little smeared. But I was like, I was more like, how do you still almost have the same outfit on?
That, well, my whole thing is when he went in there and he finally found Janet and you get this big reveal and she took off her mask, the beauty makeup was so obvious.
Yeah, it really was.
That my initial thought was, this isn't Janet. This is what he wants to see. This is something in the quantum realm that's just
so messing with his mind. So it was your fact that you're more creative in your mind than they are.
So I kept waiting for the movie to turn that corner. And then she came out and she had all these healing powers. And I'm like, so this is not Janet. This is something completely different. And then it never turned that corner. And I'm like, so you're not even going to explain what her magic fingers do.
Well, but I think that's part of it. The Easter egg at the end that they were trying to...
The quantum healing stuff.
That they were trying to research that more.
The quantum energy.
So maybe she could... I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
She could glamour herself a little bit. But I would have glamoured it with the line a little straighter. Well,
and the other reason... The reason they really introduced the quantum realm is after... For the next phase for Marvel, after Infinity War 4, Avengers 4, that leads into... Okay, that might be a way where either they can explain mutants because energy mm-hmm. is now getting out and you can introduce the mutants that way, or you could have it because they mentioned the time vortexes. You can mention it's another, you could have just like the DC TV shows where Supergirl's in a different dimension, but it's accessible. This is that gateway into that that explains it, and they won't have to just invent it from scratch and kind of figure it out.
Well,
so there's, and not saying they're going to definitely do that, but there are ways to, because of this, they knew where they were going and they wanted to have as many opportunities as possible to do this. But the quantum one, is kind of different, but yeah, her makeup didn't throw me just because I've seen other Hollywood movies where people's clothes will be like,
it was just really
automatically.
Obvious. It was just like immediately. That's what I thought. I was like, yeah,
I know, but I guess I'm just so used to movies in Hollywood where it's like the shirt's ripped and then like two scenes later they're fresh.
Yeah.
I'm just used to Hollywood movies. Yeah. It's like I'm saying that's why I understand what you guys are saying, but
I mean,
that's
what didn't bother me because
it's like I see
like
that all the time. It's like
what I noticed.
If they hadn't shown like Wasp close up with very little makeup and looking a little haggard and running around and doing all this stuff and her hair's messy and stuff.
Yeah.
And then immediately here's this person who's been in the quantum realm for 30 years and she literally looks like she just stepped off a cosmetics chair. It was jarring. It was like, and I kept waiting for that switch to flip and it's like, okay, this isn't genuine.
I didn't even think of that, by the way. I didn't think of the, oh, this isn't really her. I just literally took it at face value, and I was like,
"Yeah, I was
wearing a lot of makeup for being in this quantum realm."
I was immediately thinking, "This is what he wants to see. They're showing him what he really wants to see, and this is how he feels she would look at this point in her life. So this is what he wants to see." And they never did that.
Well,
there was a little disappointment there for me, where I'm just like,
"Well, there's a completely another thing they could play into that they're probably going to touch upon in Captain Marvel, which is Skrulls, which are shapeshifters.
Yeah.
They're classic Fantastic Four. Nemesis, they're usually green with pointy, like elf-like ears in their natural form, but they're shapeshifters. But there's this whole thing called Secret Invasion to the comic books years, and actually Brian Michael Bendis wrote it, but where there was such deep cover scrolls in place that they actually thought they were the actual heroes, and they were actually doing good things for years. They were basically sleeper agents, and then they reawakened, and you had people like in the comic books, Hawkeye, his wife, Mockingbird, turned out to be a Skrull like for 15 years. And like, she was just being a hero. And it was like all these deep seated things. And it totally destroyed like the trust in the Marvel universe and kind of led to some other things. But it's like, there's a lot of possibilities. So it could be, you know, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I don't think so because of the psychic connection that she had, you know.
Okay, so the power went out here at Geek Gala headquarters. So we're picking up. I think I was talking about the Skrulls.
Skrulls. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're back on. We don't have our souped up recording gear that we had upgraded to a while ago. So we're using the Blue Yeti. Thank you. So it's all good.
And we're sitting in the dark.
We're sitting in the dark, so we're under a time crunch now.
Tiffany, stop feeling up my leg.
Oh my gosh! But anyway, so look out. It's a possibility the Skrulls have infiltrated, and that's rumored to be something coming up in the Captain Marvel movie that they'll introduce, which would be cool because that's back in the 80s, 90s. So.
Yeah, I think it's back in the 80s, and they finished filming.
Yeah,
I think 2 days ago.
Yeah, so
it is in the can.
Yeah, so a lot of exciting stuff coming up.
So can we talk about the credit scene? Well, there's two credit scenes.
Yeah. We've got to talk about the funniest part, though, of the movie first.
Luis.
Yes, come on. Yeah. It's funny. I can't not even see Carol. This is insane. All right.
I love that scene, not just because Michael Peña is perfect at those Luis rants where he just goes, and then this person, and then this person talked to this person, and... It's the fact that the actor seemed to be having so much fun mimicking his speech patterns when they were flashing onto them. You know, Evangeline Lilly is like, yeah, I'm powerful and look at my hairdo. I'm all professional. It just looked like they were having a blast filming that scene. So that to me was like the best scene of the movie. Unfortunately, getting to that scene, you have one completely forgettable villain, which is the arms dealer that we haven't even talked about.
I like him. I mean, I didn't think it was like a well fleshed out character, but I love that actor.
Yeah.
And I loved his like big teeth. And I'm like, all right, I'm buying this. It's cool.
He reminded me a little bit of Sam Rockwell from Iron Man.
You know, he's from Justified.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally, I was like, that's bugging me.
He's been in some Misty's Quentin Tarantino films. Misty Massey loves her some Walton Goggins, so
yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
I think the fact that Ghost didn't end up being as much of a quote-unquote villain at the end, because they had this secondary villain in that was after them also, it did kind of help keep the story moving along. And then, of course, the fact that Bill Foster was potentially a villain for a second, and
for a microsecond.
Oh my god. No, I have to take back. Okay, I think the Louis scene was funny, but what was even funnier to me was the interaction with Scott and the federal agent for the house arrest. And he's like, well, should we have dinner?
Yeah.
It's like,
that was very funny.
And the fact that he was trying to learn the card tricks and stuff. So I think there was a lot of good humor there.
And
it wasn't rolling on your floor every time, but it was good pacing that way.
Yeah.
I felt like the whole thing was better paced. I never got to the point where I was like eye rolling, except for the second Easter egg.
The second Easter egg is useless.
It was totally useless, and I had to pee so bad. And I made the people next to me who also had to pee so bad stay because Matt had told us that there was a second Easter egg. I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying he didn't even know what it was.
Oh, I didn't know what it was. Yeah.
But so we stayed for the second Easter egg that was useless.
I actually told my Marvel fanboy brother not to bother with the second Easter egg because it was useless. The first Easter egg where, you know, Scott gets caught in the quantum realm because the entire Pym family, Thanos, is away.
Snapped.
I'm so hoping I know it's probably going to be Lawrence Fishburne's character that shows up and gets him out of the quantum right. realm. I'm so hoping it's Luis.
I think it's going to be a combination, don't
since
you?
Since that's Luis's van, since their little tunnel is in Luis's van.
Yeah.
I'm so hoping he shows up and then does a run through of the first Infinity War film. And then this purple guy shows up and he looks like Rivas.
If not, they should definitely make that like a bonus
scene. Something or other. Because,
yeah, that's perfect.
I think it'll probably be a combination of Foster.
Yeah, maybe Ghost. I will say that at the very end, the second one, there was nobody in the house besides the giant ant playing the drums. So maybe Luis disappeared as well.
Could be, yeah.
But that was, yeah, because the apartment was empty. Except for the aunt.
Did he live there with Luis?
I kind of felt like
they did. Yeah,
I thought Luis was there just because he couldn't leave the house to work on stuff.
That's what I thought,
because Luis was all dressed in work stuff when he was there.
Although that was like a three-story house.
Yeah.
I didn't get the feeling that they lived on all of the floors, but I felt like they just had like the one floor. But I felt like there was the one point where Luis was like, oh, don't touch this. And it felt like it wasn't like work papers. It felt like it was like maybe the ant was touching his stuff or something. Yeah,
because he was there while the ant was there and Scott was gone. And I didn't think there was really
a reason. Plus, in San Francisco. I was thinking, what in the world? Like, this house that they got going here, this apartment, that's cost them about $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he could have owned it from before.
Yeah.
You never know.
True.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy the film. I totally enjoyed the film. Okay. I will say, of the four Marvel films that have been released this year, this is probably my least favorite, but not by a huge margin.
Yeah. I mean,
I think it speaks more to the quality of what Marvel puts out.
Yeah. Than
it being a bad, like you're saying, it's exactly. not a bad film. Just the quality is so up there. It's not like DC where they're all over the place.
Yeah.
And then you've got Wonder Woman, and you're like, oh, this is refreshing.
And that being said, I am glad that Infinity Wars wasn't more integrated into the storyline because I don't think it would have held up.
No,
the fact that it was just at the very end, which was part of what we speculated about before when we were talking.
That's what we figured.
So. We figured it would be like that, and I'm glad that that's what panned out, because if it had been anything else, I think it would have been disappointing.
I think you're right, but I will admit that I was like, oh, like, I don't remember anybody who's alive, but still. But, you know, guys, know I can't remember anything after a movie ends of one of these movies.
There's fan art.
I was like, why didn't Thor show up? I wanted, like, Thor to be like, hey, dude, we need your help. Yeah. Kind of thing. I wanted Rocket to come.
There's concept art out there. I don't know if it's actually from the second Infinity War, but it's got everyone suited up, including the Hulk. But it's Banner Hulk. I mean, I know they did that in the comic books for a time where Hulk actually still had Banner's
features.
A little bit of his features. He was smaller, and he actually had Banner's brain.
Oh.
Yeah, the Hulk's interesting. There's somebody on the Charlotte Geeks Facebook group that was asking about the Hulk. I didn't get a chance to respond to it. But the thing is, the Hulk has evolved so much, because people are like, why can he talk? You know, why can he talk, you know, later on in Ragnarok, Thor Ragnarok, and he couldn't really talk that much and didn't have that much of a personality. But what it really is even when they had comics where Hulk had Banner's intellect, but he couldn't focus the rage. But what it really turned out to be, that everything that's Hulk is always Hulk. It's Banner's subconscious dealing with trauma that he's had in his life. And Hulk is that Jekyll, or, you know, that Mr. Hyde type of thing. So it's an alter ego. So it's never really Banner unless he's Banner. Sometimes he does have intellect. Another time he was a mobster. He was the Gray Hulk. when he first started, he actually spoke in the old Hulk comic books in the 60s. And he was sort of like in Thor Ragnarok, where he was a kind of a kid, kind of like a 4-year-old type of intellect. But it's interesting. But he goes through all these different transformations. And there are other times where he's just pure rage and he can't control anything. And he'll fight anybody that gets in his way that he perceives as a threat. And he just goes nuts. So you can do a lot with a Hulk, I think. But anyway, yeah. So
overall grade?
Out of 10, are we doing great grades?
I think we usually
do used to do yeah. grades.
I'll give it a B.
Okay.
I think I give it a B plus for an Ant-Man movie. I know that sounds weird, but yeah, I mean, you can't really compare it to Infinity War
or Black Panther
or even, you know, even though it's a Fox, you can't really even compare it to Deadpool. It's that's like almost a pure slapstick action movie. And this is a heist movie. Sort of.
I will say that so. I have not laughed harder than I did in one scene in Deadpool. And I was so ashamed that I was laughing at the scene, but little baby legs killed me.
Yeah. The regrow just,
I had tears going down my face. I was laughing so hard. And then afterwards, like, I can't believe I laughed at that that hard. Oh my God.
Ant-Man reminded me of the old 70s Disney movies, like with Dean Jones and some of the, because of the fact that there was multiple storylines interspersed and the action kept going. And for that kind of romp down memory lane, plus the scenes with his daughter, I give it a B to B plus.
I will say I absolutely love that they fixed the family dynamic there and that everyone was getting along. Because you rarely see that in a movie.
More than getting along. They were like, I want a hug too.
Yeah.
Well, but Scott rolled his eyes at that. So yeah.
So I kind of like that they did that. So often you just see like broken families are totally broken and they hate each other.
True.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of refreshing.
Like, this is what it should be, even if it's not what it is. It's refreshing
not to see one where they don't hate each other.
I will say the other, like, really funny part was when Janet was in Scott's body. And he was just like hugging and it really speaks to Paul Rudd's acting ability that he had that he immediately switched into that feminine type of posturing. And it was just so really good acting, but funny comedic.
Well, and the fact that Michael Douglas sat there and held his hand.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
And then when Scott came back, they're holding hands. He's looking like, what?
Yeah. Like, dude.
So many cool parts. Yeah. But
so sorry. What grade would you give it to?
I think that I would also give it a B. I enjoyed the film. I did find it, but granted, we all are saying this, like, compared to the other Marvel movies, sort of underwhelming. Certainly doesn't seem to have the same gravity because this is, like, a story specific to their lives. Whereas the other Marvel movies are like, the fucking world's going to blow up. Like,
the universe is on edge.
Kind of a thing. So given that, it's like, okay, well, this isn't as good, and I am not an Evangeline Lilly fan, really, so, like, I kind of was like, I mean, she was fine, she did her job or whatever, but I, really, the whole, me liking this film is purely, and I mean, everybody has their part, and I mean, Luis is obviously funny and all that, it's purely Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
I think that he is just such a charming, charming man, and, like, really, I would watch him do anything. Like, him hanging out alone in his apartment, I thought was fun as fuck. Like, I almost like that the most. Like, I really, like, yes, him doing, like, the karaoke, because he's so good at that. I remember him on doing the karaoke on the late night show. Oh,
with Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah. And so I just think, I think that he, to me, is the movie, and I enjoyed it because of him. But I just sort of felt it was a kind of a throwaway. I mean, I know that it has bearing on future films, but it in and of itself felt like, okay, well, this didn't really add much to me.
To the mythos.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
I think it had key elements, but I don't think we'll know what those key elements are until later.
Yeah.
And so therefore, because it has to stand on its own now, I think it was a fun romp.
Yeah.
It's a good summer movie.
Yeah, I will say that.
So what other movies have we seen pretty quickly just because we don't know how long the power is going to last on the laptop?
So two movies that are still in the theaters I want to highly, highly recommend. Okay. Three movies that are still in the theaters. One, Hereditary. If you like horror, this is the creepiest movie I've seen all year, and I loved it.
Two,
Won't You Be My Neighbor? Please go see this film. I absolutely loved it, and I cried. Three, Heartbeats Loud. This is a new Nick Offerman film. Very nice. This is a very wonderfully charming film.
Okay, we have not seen Incredibles 2. Did you see that?
I have not seen Incredibles 2 yet.
Okay. Tiffles, have you seen any movies?
I haven't. Nope. Deadpool 2 was the last one I saw.
We saw this is something that you don't see very often anymore because of, unfortunately, a side effect of all the big movie, the tentpole movies at Marvel and Disney and everyone's putting out, but we saw it on Amazon, actually. What was it? I Love You?
Yeah.
So this was a super independent.
Hello, I Love You.
Hello, I Love You. Super independent movie where the lighting's bad. Uncharacteristically, the audio is actually really good. Usually that's the part they mess up, but it was, and it's my biggest pet peeve, but I haven't really seen a true indie movie like this that probably was easily under $100,000
Definitely to make, like, so. B-movie, C-movie actors.
Yeah.
But great story.
Great story, some great little performances, and
basically this guy's trying to get into show business, television, and he comes up with a concept of going up and telling people hello, I love them, and proposing to them and seeing if he can get somebody to accept or at least go on a week of dates with him while they're secretly recording the person. And then if the person allows him to propose again at the end and accepts, they win $10,000. But the girl that he gets to accept it has a roommate that does a lot of practical jokes on her. So she goes along with it, assuming it's a practical joke. And then they end up going on the week of dates.
Yeah. That's on Amazon. If you've got Prime, it's free.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely worth the hour and a half. So.
Oh, yeah.
And then I did lie. I actually saw a tag last week.
Oh, you're going to tell me about it.
Yeah. So I had really three different friends that were like, this movie was super funny. You got it. And it's been like in the theater quite a while.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, this really must be a good film. I did not laugh out loud one time. Like, I mean, it's the guys have good chemistry. I mean, Jeremy Renner is like his level of intensity in this movie. I know it's supposed to be kind of funny, the juxtaposition of how silly these guys are and how serious he is.
All right.
But it kind of was just, like, creepy in a way. Like, oh, he's coming behind me, and he's going to try to do this. And it's, like, it's not funny. It's creepy, like, that your whole life is this dude and stuff. And, like, I mean, it was enjoyable. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't – it's not like you're going to come out of there feeling depressed or anything. But, like, it just – and it's nice at the end you see the real guys – that really do play tag in real life. And that's kind of cute, but like it really wasn't that funny.
I wonder why it was in the theater. So like you're saying, if it was just like something that could just throw up that kind of everybody will try it or something. I don't know.
It's and it's really nothing offensive about it. It's not like super hard R. I mean, it is R rated, but like, it's not like a hard R where like you're seeing bush and titties and like, you know,
I'm out, forget that.
You know, it's
not Porky's 10.
Damn. No, it's not Porky's.
Well, shoot,
you can see it with your parents.
That's so cool.
Take your mom, Matt.
That's okay. I will say, since you mentioned Jeremy Renner, I saw him and this is a couple months ago, but on HBO I watched it. What was it, Bringing Down the House? Yeah, Will Ferrell thing, and he was a villain in that, and he was very serious in that. But I did just hear, you guys might have heard the news that he was actually cast in the new Spawn movie. So he's going to play Twitch, which was a spinoff comic book, same on Twitch, and these two detectives, and I think that's pretty cool casting. But so it looks like he's got some post Avengers life if his contract doesn't get extended a little bit there.
Well, that's good. Yeah, and Jeremy Renner, of course, if you've heard the news, been through, what, 5 Marvel movies now, never gotten hurt, broke both of his arms in this tag movie.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that. Actually.
Fractured an elbow and fractured a tibia.
He does have, like, action in the movie.
It's interesting, in the first 2 weeks, and then he was supposed to go film Marvel in between, and they had to, like, reshoot certain things. So.
Oh, wow.
That could explain why he wasn't in the first Infinity Wars.
Sorry, that was a microphone falling.
Yes, the world is coming apart. Well, listen, it's getting hot in here.
Yeah. It's getting
hot. Not that way.
Oh, sorry.
But we have loved re-listening to all the Con Carolinas interviews, and hopefully you go back and re-listen to them. Also, by the time this goes up, we'll be at a MagiCon that weekend, so make sure to come and see us. And, of course, we'll be at Charlotte Comic Con. And, you know, if you have any movies or books or music or TV shows you want us to review, send us an email. Just be heyyou@guardiansofthegeekery.com. And you can spell hey you any way you want to. It'll still come to me.
So. Hey.
You. Oh, and a big shout out to our Patreon supporters. We have Started a Patreon. It's available both on Guardians of the Geekery and CharlotteGeeks.com. It all goes to the same place. And special thanks to Douglas Davidson and Christopher Jones of the Nerd Bliss podcast and PK, Ellen PK, and then our own Star-Lord supported us. Thank you.
Support local.
Support local. Give us a buck.
Starting with the house. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Guardians of the Geekery. For more information, go to guardiansofthegeekery.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/guardiansofthegeekery and on Twitter at CLTGOG. Music used by Guardians of the Geekery, Lock and Load, and A Day in the Sun by Jens Kilstofta. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International.